Now, the aim of myths is to carry you past that individuation into the realization of the separateness without losing the reference to individuation. That is to say, we live at an interface. And a point I'd like to make is that all of the great mythologies are talking about that interface all the time. Now, this talking operates on four levels. There are four functions, four main functions that a living mythology serves. And unless it's serving those functions, it is not in its total career. The first function I would call the metaphysical one, and it's this one that I've just spoken about. Realizing a mystery of unity, a dimension of unity, invisible, unknowable to the mind, that transcends the field of separateness. It is a deep mystery, and it's a mystery, as we've just seen, that announces itself through feeling relationships or compassion relationships. Passion is the realization of separateness. You want to enjoy. Compassion is losing that and experiencing the unity. Mythology is a world, I would say, of compassion. Often we are led to it through passion, but the ultimate realization must be of compassion. And so all the exercises of life can be, as it were, rituals of this compassion. And when the accent of a mythology is on the transcendent and not on the historical facts, that everything in life becomes a ritual, you might say, of compassion. The essence of marriage is, for example, a ritual essence of compassion, of together living, of relationship, of yielding, of losing oneself in the other. It's not a long love affair. A love affair is usually passion. So if the relationship is one of just passion, well, have a love affair. Love affairs always end badly. And when marriages are simply love affairs, they end badly too. But the relationship that involves this of yielding yourself is a mystical relationship. Similarly, in warfare, the individual loses himself in the service of his tribe, his nation, his religion, or whatever. This is a compassion. And you'll see when you think about things how this works. Doing something for others. The first function, then, of mythology is a mystical one, of yielding to this mystery of life and saying yes to it and losing yourself in it. However, a lot of people find it difficult to affirm life. Think of the situation. For millions of years, life had been in existence before eyes opened and saw what was going on out there. What was going on? Life was eating life. We live by eating others. We live by killing. Life lives on life. The cruelty and brutality of many primitive initiation ceremonies has to do with this, with saying yes to the brutal, ruthless fact of life. Then about the 8th century BC, there began to be a generation that said no to that aspect of life and pulled out. And so you have what I call the great reversal, religions of disengagement from life, as though one were to have been born, look, see what's going on, and say, no, I say no to that. Religions like Jainism and certain aspects of ascetic Hinduism, Buddhism, and even Christianity. Two main attitudes, then, of affirming this as an exhilarating and thrilling and mysterious, self-giving, and other giving. Second, rejection of it all. And then third, that comes with Zoroaster about, we really don't know the dates of Zoroaster, but perhaps 7th century BC, something like that. The notion of an originally good, perfect world, light and peaceful, and then a fall, as in the fall of the garden, and the corruption of nature, and now an exercise in restoration, getting back to the good world again. In this case, there is an ethical judgment characteristic of all affirmations of the world. You affirm only that which agrees with your notion of what the world should be. We're in that tradition. The first function of religion, then, of a myth, is to relate you either positively, negatively, or critically to the being of beings of the world.